Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
We're going to talk about something I call mixed de novo. You'll hear it called other kinds of things. What this really is mixing up a bunch of kinds of designs. So what we're going to have here then is, well, so far we've talked about simple between designs. In other words, between groups. So you have, now when I say simple, I just mean that, well, you know, we have a simple design with one variable, or simple within one variable that's repeated. It's not advancing here. What's going on? Oh, I know why. Just a moment. All right. Let me just stop for a moment and do things. Where'd you go? There. View. Show inspector. And, well, let's just start again. Okay. So we've talked about, like I said, simple between, simple within, factorial between, and factorial within. In other words, you can have, and we talked about this just the end of last class. Remember, we had the same, we had different retention intervals for the same subjects and different kinds of tests. So that's a factorial design within subjects. We've done a factorial design between subjects, right? A by B or A, B, C or whatever. You can do those either between or within, and it's really not a problem. Now, what about combining the two? And in fact, that's a very common approach, where you might have one variable that's repeated and one variable that's between subjects. Okay? Well, that sounds like fun. Let's do it. Okay, it's not that much fun, but I gotta, you know. Well, it actually is fun for me, but there's clearly something wrong with me. Well, you might ask why, other than that I think it's fun. And there are cases, in fact, where we might want one between variable and one within subjects variable. And an example I can think of here right off the top of my head is species and learning, because that's kind of why I'm standing here and have those letters after my name. My PhD work was all on comparing two different species of bird in their learning ability. I can't do that within subject. I can't randomly assign birds to species and then switch their species partway through, because then people will be worshiping me on Sundays. So, or Fridays, or whatever, Saturday, whatever day your religion worships people. What about sex differences? What if you want to look at learning over time and compare males and females, humans? There was a great paper a couple years ago about spatial ability, comparing males and females when they play Call of Duty 3. When you start out, this is work done, in fact, with my old stats prof did, the guy I'm always, the Scottish guy I'm always quoting. One of his graduate students had the classic thing where you compare males and females and spatial effects, and there's a difference. Males are better than females. Then you have him play Call of Duty 3 for an hour. And then you test him again. Males stay the same, females start to get better. You have him play for another hour, and males and females are the same. Now, I don't know how long-lasting that effect is. It probably isn't something that's permanent, because we can assume that other spatial tasks, etc., have been out there for people. But it's interesting that he found this, and there's no way he could do this by... You have to do learning, so you have to do changes over time, and then you got a between-subject variable, which is sex. I refuse to say gender. I do. It bugs the hell out of me. So, of course you'd want to do it in that case. So there's a lot of times where you're going to have something repeated and something between. Right? And you'll see a lot of experiments like this. So, etc. So, here's an example. What if we had two groups of subjects? One group's going to get an implicit test, and one group's going to get an explicit test. Right, remember what the implicit test is? That's that word fragment completion, priming. And explicit test is recall. Right? Now, there's a pretty decent reason that you might not want to give the same group implicit and explicit tests. And that's that there's sort of, there might be some concern that the explicit task sort of contaminates the implicit task. So if I have you recalling words, maybe that then affects your implicit memory for filling in the blanks. And then we got retention intervals there. And that, while that doesn't seem to be true for retention intervals, it is true for levels of processing. The levels of processing effects show up in repeated measures designs and not in between groups designs, which is a weird, subtle difference. Chalice and Broadbeck, 1992.
So in that case, the retention intervals
within and the implicit between? Yep. Retention intervals within. Because it's within group. How do you know something's within group? Every subject gets every level of the variable. Everybody has a 5-minute retention interval, both group one and group two. Everybody has a 1-hour retention interval, group one and group two. Everyone has a 24-hour retention interval, group one, group two. But one group one, get the implicit test, and the other group two, get the explicit test. Okay? And like I said, there's some concern there. And it does make some sense to have them divided into two groups. Right? Questions about this? Does this make sense why you'd have this kind of design? And you understand the design? You okay? All right. The thing is, we still want a decay function if there's going to be any decay. We still want to see if memory decays. So you still want to test the same subjects, in this case, 3 times. Right? You don't just want to have one group here, one group here, one group here. You want to see that the same people change over time. That's important. Right? Okay? Questions? So you see the logic behind this? Does this make some sense? Yes, please. Word fragment completion. You know, fill in the blanks. Have you taken memory? No, you haven't, because I teach it. I don't remember you being there 2 years ago. Okay. It's offered next year. Okay. Good course. Prof's a bit of a dick. But yeah, I mean, and this is a case where, yeah, the implicit memory, it's one of those things where it's memory you don't actually need to complete the task, but it helps and you're not aware you have it. For those of you interested in that kind of stuff. If you really are interested in implicit memory, a nice review is a paper by Dan Schachter, Psych Review, 1991. It's an older paper, but it's got all the good results in it. Implicit memory, history and current directions or something it's called. It's in Psych Review and it's Dan Schachter. So I love implicit memory stuff. It's great stuff. So I did my postdoc about implicit memory in pigeons. Broadbeck, 1997. So what are the sources of variation here? And I'm just saying, oh yeah, group 1 has subjects 1 to 10, group 2 has subjects 11 to 20. Okay, and I just picked numbers. I said there's 10 subjects per group. I'm giving them numbers, the subjects 1 to 10, 11 to 20. So there's the design again. Well, test type is a source of variation, right? Because they could have different tests, implicit or explicit. And we're interested in, is that a source of variation? Retention interval. That's a source of variation. That's where we're going to get that decay function or not. And of course, oh, what's that? What does that mean? Subjects within test type. Or if you want to get even more technical, subjects nested within test type. Yes, please.
Why is there group one for each?
Oh, shit, yeah, you're right. It should be group two, group two, group two at the bottom. You're right, sorry about that. Yeah, under explicit, these should all be twos. Damn. It's screws the whole thing. Yeah, thank you. So explicit should all be group 2. Sorry about that. Subjects are nested within test type. There are different subjects in different groups, right? In different kinds of test. Subjects are always nested within... Subjects are always nested within the between subject variable. So it's subjects nested within test type. Like within, obviously, should be one word as well.
What do you mean by that? Like, do you mean the difference between...
Yeah, so it means that group 1 gets one test type and group 2 gets another test type. As Mike pointed out, there's a typo there. It should be group 2 for the explicit one. Yep.
But isn't that what number of test type covers? Like,
test type is one. What would we do normally? We would think of the sources of variation being the within subject variable, the between subject variable. Well, when we did the first thing with Yates order, the within subject variable... and the subjects, right? But in this case, can you talk about subjects without saying what group they're in? You can't, right? That's the other sort of hint. It's like, do I have to talk about the subjects being nested? Well, I can't just talk about subjects, because some subjects get an implicit test, and some subjects get an explicit test, right? So if that's the case, I have to say that one is nested within the other. So subjects are nested within test type. Does that make sense?
It's okay. I'm just saying.
You sure? No, it's okay.
Well, I just don't know what you mean by nesting.
How else can I put this? It means that some subjects get one level of the variable test type and other subjects get another level. It means that not all subjects get all levels of test type. And again, those should all be G2. So what we do now is we have to build the NL severance table. You have to do the math. This is one of those things where it's not about the math so much. It's about looking at the source of variation degrees of freedom table. Now, the first thing you do, and you have to know what you test with what, the very first thing you do is you list the between subjects variable. That's test. There are two levels of test. It has one degree of freedom. There's implicit and explicit. So the first thing you do is you do the between subjects variable. Are there any other between subjects variables? Well, retention interval is a within subjects variable, so no. Between, now the subjects. Subjects are nested within test. That has 18 degrees of freedom. N minus 1, 9 times 2. It's 9, 10 minus 1, so 9, twice, because there's two levels of test. So they have 18 degrees of freedom. The next thing you do is you list, so we've got between, then subjects, now we do our within. Within subjects variable is retention interval. It has three levels, 5 minutes, 1 hour, 24 hours. We lose a degree of freedom. It now has 2 degrees of freedom. Now you start interacting terms. Retention interval by test. Right? Retention interval minus 1, test minus 1. 2 times 1 is 2. Retention interval by subjects within test. It has 36 degrees of freedom. 2 times 9 times 2, which is 36. You can't cross retention interval with itself, so you stop. Now, one of the ways to test if you should stop, you might think, well, I don't know did I get all the degrees of freedom? Add them up. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 9, 5, 20, 59. And there's 60 observations. I got 59 degrees of freedom. So I know I got the chance of me doing this incorrectly and getting the degrees of freedom to come out right is pretty slim. It will happen, but it's pretty slim. So I know I've got the degrees of freedom right, added up, so that means I probably did this properly. So now how do we test what with what? Well, this thing, as I said the other day, it's called Yates order. And it just says take the term below what you're interested in that has it in it and the subjects, and that's going to be what our error term is. So if we're going to test to find out if the variable test type has a significant effect, we're going to take the mean squared for test type and divide it by the mean squared for subjects within test type. For retention interval by test, we're going to test that with retention interval by subjects within test. This is going to be the error term for both of these. See, the beautiful thing here is with this Yates order deal is you don't have to figure out the expected values of mean squares to find out what to test with what. Because this mechanical method of doing this always works if all your variables are fixed, and they always are, almost always are. They're almost always fixed factors. And subjects is assumed to be a random factor, and of course it is. You might say, again, why would I do this? Won't the software do it? When you get to a complicated design of any sort, what starts to happen is that you could make a mistake. The software doesn't know, right? So it just does what you tell it to do. It does what you tell it to do. The problem now becomes these things come out. It spits it out. And if you don't know what to divide by what, because maybe the software doesn't know, or you forgot something, you should be able to look and say, okay, when it's testing to see if does the analysis of variance to find out if there's a significant effective test, it should have 1 in 18 degrees of freedom, does it? It's the same thing when you're reading an article. You'd be amazed. It doesn't happen as often once things get to be published. But I'll tell you, when I get things for review from journals, the number of times, the first thing I do is I go right to the method section and I plot out what the design looks like. I draw the thing up like, you know, A, B, C, group 1, group 2, group 3. I do the whole, and I do this. And then I take a look at their statistics and go, oh, they made a mistake. This happens about between 10 and 15% of the articles I review. Right? People trust computers too much. They put numbers in, it spits it out, and they go, oh, look, significant, I quit. Now I'll write my article. No, that's not what you should do. And they end up making mistakes. And finally, if you're doing something convoluted with SPSS, like I talked about here, because we don't have the repeated measures module, there's ways that are really take a lot of thinking about how to do this. Might have to do 2 or 3 analyses and break stuff down. I was doing this with Melissa St. Louis data the other day because she's got a one between, one within, and it made it very complicated. I kept sending her off saying, go do this now. Now go do this. She brought it to me, and I thought, okay, am I doing this properly? Do I have the degrees of freedom right? And that allowed me to make sure I was doing the right thing. So it really is useful because you'd be surprised how many times people make these complicated, and this isn't that complicated a design, but it's a lot like, it's almost exactly like hers. And even something like this, it's an easy place to make mistakes. But what if you had 2 within and 3 between? It's going to be complicated. And then how do you know what to test with what? Okay, so that's why we're doing this. All right. Questions about this? Do you see how I did this? Between, subjects, within. That's how you do it. Between, subjects, within. Yes, Stephanie?
If you have multiple levels of, let's say, between or within, does it matter which one you put first?
No. I always start with A because it comes in the alphabet first, but that's just, because I'm a little Asperger-y. Got a touch of it, I think. My son comes by it honestly, I think. There's a reason I memorized the flag of every country in the world when I was seven. Because I'm a goof. And I have weird obsessions. And yeah, I think I got a bit of that. So I just go, well, it's got a lot more order if you do A first, but it doesn't really matter, though. But if you have more than one variable that's between, you got to do both those toward you before you do subjects. Right? And if you have, and we'll have examples like that in a second, when you do that, then you got to go like A, B, A by B. Right? Again, questions. Is this, do you see what I did here? Between, subjects, within. You're going to hear this for the next week and a half or so. You're going to be seeing it in your sleep. Doing these things is going to be about 40% of the final exam. Because it's an exceedingly useful skill. Maybe even higher than that, maybe 50%. The final assignment, we'll be doing a bunch of these. So the probably learning how to do it might be. Yeah, Nicole.
Well, are you going to give, like, another example?
No, that's it, I quit. Yes, of course.
Okay.
No, no, no. You should have now completely internalized this and it now becomes second nature. Of course, we're going to see more. So to review the idea, though, between subjects within. Then do the interactions of everything as you go along. So if you're listing variables, you have to interact them with the things above them. This will become mechanical. Well, it is mechanical, but it will become almost second nature. Because we're going to do so many freaking numbers of them. And when you go to study for the final exam, one of the things I suggest that you do is make up a buttload of examples and trade them around. I'll also post on the blog a bunch of review questions you can do, stuff like that. So you will get good at this. The error terms are easy. All you do is you go, oh, A, let's keep going below until I find A and an S. Oh, there it is. That's my error term. Okay? You just scratch your head, Joel? You weren't asking a question?
Oh, it was actually AJ.
Okay. All right. Whatever works for you. Now, again, this assumes everything is fixed and the subjects are random, but the chances of us running into something where everything, where this isn't the case is pretty slim. It's pretty slim. It happens, but it's not that not that likely. Here's another example. N's going to equal 5 in this one. See, I told you it'd be more. See? Oh, you like that? Okay. Now, what do we have here? We got what? We got, it's a 2 by 2 by 3. Wow. We got an A, a B, and a C. Do we have any between factors here? Which of those is of A, B, and C, or any of those between? In other words, different subjects, jects get different levels of A or B or C. Yeah, A is, look, because A1, that's group 1 gets only A1. Group 2 gets only A2. What about B or C? Are they between or within? They're both within, yeah. Because look, everybody gets every level of C. Look, C1, group 1, group 2. C2, group 1, group 2. Everybody gets every level of B. B1, B2, B3. Right? Everybody gets every level. So between, then you list subjects, then you do the within. Between, subjects, within. Between, variable is A, within are B and C. One of the things you can do, and this is what I would do, in fact, I do this still, as I said, when I'm looking stuff over, is I do this for myself. I just list out between, and then where how are the subjects, and within. And if the between, the subjects have to be nested in the between subject variable. By definition, they must be. So subjects are going to be nested within A. They have to be. Subjects can't be nested within a within subject factor.
Is it because they're randomly assigned?
No, actually, it's got nothing to do with it. They should be randomly assigned for a good experimental design, but it has nothing to do with it. It just means they have different levels of A.
Stuck in that level.
They're in that level, they get nothing else. That's right. But they get every other level of B and C.
Yeah.
So that means it's a within. Those are withins. But A has to be a between. Yep. Yeah, they're randomly assigned. They're just assigned to different groups. Because remember, this could be species. We don't randomly assign subjects to species. This is a factorial design, but it's a factorial design with one between, two within. Yeah, mixed model, or mixed design, you might call it. So that's what this looks like. Look at all the error terms all of a sudden. Now, how did I do this? Well, there's between, subjects, within. So we list the between first, A. A has two levels. We lose a degree of freedom. Are there any more between subjects variables? Well, we've already determined that there's just A. So we got to talk about the subjects. The subjects are always going to be listed. Unless there are no between subjects factors, they're always going to be nested within the thing above it, if you're doing this properly. So subjects within A. Right? 4 and minus 1 times 2 levels of A equals 8. You would then test A with S within A. Remember, I didn't list S by itself because I can't talk about subjects without mentioning where they are. So now, and I'm violating my rule I said because now I'm going to do C first, not B. I'm going to list the within subjects factors. C, you could have started with B. C has C minus 1 degrees of freedom. There are two levels of C, right? So 2 minus 1 is 1. Now what do I do next? Where do I get all these from? C, C by A, C by S within A. C by A is going to have C minus 1 times A minus 1 degrees of freedom, 1. C minus 1 times N minus 1 times A is going to have 8 degrees of freedom. So you're going to test both C and the C by A interaction with C by S within A. N minus 1, it's little n, so it's the number of subjects per group. Yep.
And A is the amount of A.
There's two levels of A. That's right. Is there a significant effect of A, a significant effect of C, a significant A by C interaction? Exactly what you want to tell you.
So it's kind of like, you know,
it
also tells you what the B post hoc is?
No. It's not kind of like an ANOVA. It's exactly like one. That's what it is. So you're doing an analysis. This is for analysis of variance. If you have to do post hocs, you use the various post hoc procedures. And you use the error term, like, you know how on some of the post hocs, like, say, for the Bonferroni, it's 2 times mean squared error, right?
Yeah.
You would find the mean squared error in this case, let's say you're testing different levels of C, is the error for C by, is the error term would be the mean square for C by S within A.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes?
Well, for B, you know, B S A, like B S A, and then the degrees of freedom, wouldn't it be B minus 1, then N minus 1 times A?
We'll get there. Yes, that's a mistake. Damn. I think. Yeah, that's right. So, next thing we list is B, because we can't. B minus 1. 2 degrees of freedom. B by A. B by S within A, and Mike just pointed out the N and the A should switch around. It's going to be 2 times n minus 1 times 4 times 2. Yeah. Yeah, so that should be b minus 1 times n minus 1 times a. Typo. So b, b by a, b by s within a, b by c, b by c by a, b by c by s within a. And the a and the n just switch around. Yeah, there's a mistake there. Yeah, it's exactly what you're doing. You're accounting for everything. You're partitioning the degrees of freedom in the sums of squares. It's exactly what we used to do by showing you a whole bunch of formulas. We could do that with this, and it'd take me an hour to derive it, because I don't know how to do it off by heart. Or I could just do this, and it takes me 45 seconds. So I'd prefer that.
Where do you use your sums of squares?
The sums of squares? Well, they'd be the mean square that you... what do you mean, where do you use them?
Well, understand? Because I'm looking at your test, right? And obviously, just looking at degrees of freedom. No,
you're going to end up with a mean square for, say, A, and a mean square for S within A. Yeah. The computer will calculate that for you. You won't be doing that yourself. You could do it. Have fun. I mean, it's certainly doable.
Well, like, let's look at S by A, right?
You're, sure.
Like, it's 8.
S within A, you mean, yes?
Yeah. So, but...
It has 8 degrees of freedom.
And then that's just what you're dividing the mean squares by?
That's right.
But the mean squares...
You mean the sums of squares, yes.
Or whatever. You'll get that by the computer.
The computer will do that for you. Or you can do it by hand. I mean, if you're really keen and like to waste your own time. Yeah. So again, in the last two, in B by S within A and B by C by S within A, the N and the A should be switched around in the degrees of freedom. I'm sorry about that. One of the things, when you start to do these things, they have a shape. You see, it's got a Christmas tree shape, right? It gets bigger, then smaller, then bigger, then smaller. And of course, it has to do that because you're introducing new things and then interacting it with everything that's above it. It should look like that. If it doesn't look like that when you're calculating it, you're doing it wrong. If the degrees of freedom don't add up, you're doing it wrong. And this is one of the things to test here. Did we do this right? 1 and 8 is 9, 10, 11, 19, 21, 22, 23, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 59. And we had 10 cells with 5 subjects each. That's 60 in total. When m minus 1 is 59. Probably did it right. Probably did it right. Might. Sure. Total number of subjects in the observations in the experiment. Total number of observations in the experiment. Yeah, there'd probably be something on a quiz, but there's definitely going to be like 5 of these in the final. Or 4. No. This is a useful skill. Yeah, later what you would do is you're going to get the mean squared for A and the mean squared for S within A, and divide the mean squared for A divided by the mean squared for S within A.
Okay, so it's always A and then over S within A.
Over S, the Yates order just says find the thing below it that has it in it and subjects and divide it by that. Yeah, it's exceedingly it's mechanical. It's just a way to do it that works. It's one of those wonderful, neat things about stuff like this. You know, it's like, for some reason, the slope of a curve, if you take the coefficient multiplied times the exponent, you do a derivative. For some weird reason, that tells you that. It's one of those just weird things about math. You know, it's like pi. It just is. It's cool. Again, this assumes that A, B, and C are fixed factors, and subjects are a random factor, but again, they always are. Okay, before I go back, let me go back to this one. Do we have any questions on that? Do you see how I did that? Except for the fact that the N and the A, little n and little a, on these ones here should be reversed. Yes, please.
Is the test column just that error term?
Yeah, it's exactly. What's the error term for A? What's the error term for C? What's the error term for C by A? And you would never actually have that in your analysis of variance summary table. It doesn't come out that way. I'm just saying, reminding yourself, what do you test with what? Other questions? Okay, let's do another one. Here's one. Looks similar. What do we got here? Okay, so what are the between subjects variables here? Then we're going to list between subjects within. What's a between subjects variable? What is a variable that only that subjects only get one level of? B is for sure. Group 1 and group 3 get B1. Group 2 and group 4 get B2. That's certainly one of them. When I say one of them, that should tell you there's more than one. C? I don't know, Steph. Group 1, 2, 3, and 4 get C1, 2, and 3. So that's a within. What about A? Group 1 and group 2 get A1. Group 3 and group 4 get A2. Don't they? Right? B is a between subject factor because 1 and 3 get B1, and 2 and 4 get B2. A is a between subject factor because 1 and 2 get A1, and 3 and 4 get A2. Everybody gets every level of C. It's a within subject factor. It's the repeated factor here, right? 1, 2, and 3. Everybody gets every level. Right? Let's see, what's the sample size? I'll let you know in a second. Both A and B are between here. So subjects are nested within AB. They're nested within AB interactions. If I'm going to tell you exactly where the subjects are, I can't just say what level of A they're in because they're also somehow nested within B. So I got to say what level of A and what level of B they're in. In other words, they're within AB interactions. Let's say it's 6 per group. That's what it says there. So let's do a quick check. How many observations do we have? Well, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times 3, 12. 12 cells, 6 per cell. 12 times 6 is 72, right? So we have 72 observations. We should have 71 degrees of freedom when we're done. Okay. Let's go back, though. Again, questions. Why? Whoops, what am I doing? Here we go. Does everybody see why A and B are between subjects factors and C is a within subject factor? Does everybody see that? A and B are between because different subjects get different levels of A and different levels of B. And when you're going to talk about the subjects, they're nested within A-B interactions. So when you're talking about the subjects, group 1's an A1, B1. Group 2's an A1, B2. Group 3's an A2, B1. Group 4's an A2, B2. I have to talk about both variables at the same time here. Right? Okay. And C is within because everybody gets all, is it three? Yeah, all three levels of C. So it's a within. So, first thing we list, I listed A first because, like I said, sort of symmetry, I kind of like that. So what do we got? A has A minus 1 degree of freedom. B, well, we have to list the next with between subjects variable, B. Then we do the same old thing. A, B, A, B. Now, we can't do B by itself. You wouldn't list B by B. It wouldn't make any sense. So the next thing you list is S within AB. Right? S is nested within AB. So it's N minus 1 times A times B. It's 5 times 2 times 2. Right? We're going to test AB and A by B by using S within AB. We just look for the thing below it that has S in it and it. Well, A has S. Sorry, A. Look, we have. Look, let's go below it. Oh, S and A. That's the error term. For B, we look below it. Oh, yeah, look, S and B. A and B, oh, it's got both those and S. Now we do C, because it's the within. We've done between and subjects. Now we do within. Between, subjects, within. C has C minus 1. So it has 2 degrees of freedom. C. C by A, C by B, C by AB, C by S within AB. C minus 1, 2 degrees of freedom. For CA, we have A minus 1 times C minus 1 degrees of freedom, 2 again. For CB, B minus 1 and C minus 1, 2 again. For CAB, A minus 1, B minus 1, C minus 1, 2. For C by S within AB, C minus 1 times N minus 1 times A times B. That's going to be 2 times 5 times 2 times 2, which is 40. 1, 2, 3, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 71. Booyah. Got it right. That's the worst booyah ever. Booyah. One could calculate them, but it would be... Actually, you know how to do the first one for A, B, A by B, and S within A, B. But no.
The mean square root of the
divided. What did
you call the S within the error term? They're error terms. So C by S within A, B, for example, is the error term for C, CA, CB, and CAB. The mean squared for C by S within A, B is what you test the mean squared for C to determine if you have an effective C. The mean squared for CA to determine if you have an interaction of C by B. To test CB, determine if you have an interaction of C by B, and determine if you have the three-way interaction ABC or CAB, whatever you want to call it, you're going to test the mean squared for CAB by the mean squared for C by S within AB. On the other hand, to test A by itself, the main effect of A, the main effect of B, and the interaction of A and B, you're going to test all of those mean squares with the mean squared for S within AB. Now, I know you think it's done, but I'm going to show you something cool. You might think this is something, well, I think it's cool, you probably think it's stupid. But this is something that is not just about these complicated two between, one within, three beside itself designs. Any design does this. They all work this way. So let's think of the simplest possible analysis of variance design known to the humans. Let's use two groups, A1 and A2. Group 1's in A1, group 2's in A2. That looks a great. Let's how many subjects you want? What do you say? Per group. 7. 7 subjects per group. 7 subjects in group 1, 7 subjects in group 2. What's our between subject factor? Yeah. Do we have any within subjects factors?
Well, we only have one factor. And if A is between, yeah.
Where are subjects? Describe them.
Where are
they? Like, they're nested in A. You have to say, you can't just talk about subjects. You have to say subjects within A. So if we were doing source of variation degrees of freedom table for this, we get this. A, how many degrees of freedom does A have? No, A.
Yeah.
1. What's the next term?
Just subjects within A.
Subjects within A. How many degrees of freedom does it have? 6 times 2
Because, right, remember, it's n minus 1 times 2. It's going to have 12. What's our total? Big N minus 1. It's going to have 13 degrees of freedom. Well, let's see. 4, 7 and 7, 14. 13, great. We test A with what? Well, there's only one thing we can test it with. S within A. And you're thinking, a big deal, Dave. Well, let's think about doing this the old-fashioned way. Between subjects, and we call that error, or we call within subjects, and total. Degrees of freedom. For between subjects, remember it's k minus 1, right? And big N minus k, or k times little n minus 1. And the total is n minus 1. Let's say between subjects then, which is the same as A, is going to have 1 degree of freedom. And this is going to have, let's see, 14 minus 2 is going to be 12. And you always test the between subjects by within subjects. Oh, look, it works there too. You've actually been doing this all along. You just didn't know it. What about, oh, let's do a simple, the other simplest possible design. Let's just do the same thing, except now we're going to have two levels of A, and it's going to be repeated. Group 1 twice. And it's still, I said 7, right? So N's still going to be 7. Do we have any between subjects variables here? No, right? Because it's the same subjects twice. We have subjects, and we have A. So we start by listing... Well, the betweens, we don't have any, so we start with subjects. Subjects, n minus 1, which equals 6. Then we list a minus 1, which is 1. Then we do a by s, which is going to have 6. And then our total... 13. You test A by within by A by you test A with A by S. So those are two simple ones we've done. Take a look at what's still up there on the screen, ignoring the A the levels of C in the final example on the slides. So ignoring the levels of C. A, B, A by B, right, which are just main effect of A, main effect of B, A-B interaction. We're going to divide that by subjects within A-B, or we often use, or we also, what like SPSS and SAS and things like that, what do they call it? They call it error, or within cell. But you're doing it, you've been doing this all along. You got your between, you got your subjects, you got your within. Remember we had to go through that convoluted thing about working at expected values of mean squares to determine what mean squared divided by what one? There's a reason I did that, because that's the logic behind it. But now I show you there's a mechanical way to do this, and you won't ever, if you do it properly, if you do the Yates order properly, you will never get the error term wrong. You will always get it right. It's impossible to get it wrong if you do Yates order right. So you see this? This is not just something brand new that we've never done before. This is something, it's been working like this. It worked like this in 2126 at the end when I said, oh, here's analysis of variance. This is kind of what it does. We should probably be able to go the other way too, don't you think? Shouldn't we be able to look at one of these kind of tables and rebuild it? We have the technology. Somebody got my reference to the $6 million man, which is awesome. I wish they'd do a reimagining of that series. They tried the Bionic Woman, and it was awful. Yeah. It's horrible. Yeah. Da, 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 da. I know the whole... I used to love that show as a kid. Steve Austin, astronaut, a man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to build the world's first bionic man, better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster. So let's look at, well, you know what we could do? We got this one here. Let's bring it back up. Let's bring this guy right back up here. Can you rebuild that? Sure you can. You got to take a look. I mean, assuming this is correct, which it is, you should go the other way. So what do you got? What are the between subjects factors? A and B, because they're above the first time you list subjects. Right? So you could draw this guy up. So we got, how many levels does A have?
Two.
Why do we know that? That's right. So we got A1, A2, and we've got how many levels of B? Two again, right? And we know that we have different subjects in different A-B interactions. So we know we have, it doesn't matter what we do here, group 1, group 2, group 3, group 4. You might say, wait a second, Dave, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it actually goes 1, 2, 3, 4 or something like that. It doesn't matter. Group really isn't a factor. Subjects are. It's sort of a pseudo factor. Want to call it that? Now, we've also got a within subjects factor, which is C. It's the first thing listed on its own, right? The first time you see it, below the first time it was subjects. It's got to be a within, which means we just got to do this three times. And then we got to make sure we do this the same way with the groups. Oh, what's the number of subjects? Well, it's got to be what? Let's see. Well, n minus 1 times a times b equals 20. What's a? Well, we know a is 2 and b is 2. Now solve for n. Right? So it's got to be 6. Oh, look. 15 points. On the final exam. Not on a quiz, because it'd be worth more than a whole quiz. Right? Do that four times. 10 or 15, depending on how hard I think it is. And you're looking at that right now going, but that one is hard. No, it's not. Because once you practice them a few times, that one's an easy one.
How would you go about figuring out n?
Oh, yeah. How would you figure out n? Because you'd have this. You have 20. You know a and b are both equal to 2. So n minus 1 times 2 equals 20. Solve for n. Right? So to break it down, you'll end up with, oh, what's n have to equal? You can either actually expand it out and actually solve for n, or you could look at that and go, what's n have to equal to make that equal 20? Just do it in your head and go, well, that means that that number in that bracket has to equal 5, which means n must equal 6. You know what I wrote up there? I hope I did. Yeah, I did. Good.
So and that would be, in each group, there's 6 people.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
right.
You would do your total because you have however many rooms.
Six times we have what? How many cells do we have? We have 12.
Right.
12 times 6 is 72. Great way to check your work. 72, that means you have to have 71 total. We have 71 in total. Right? So, and like I said, this is what I do when I'm reviewing an article or even reading an article. I want to be able to look at the design. Experiments don't make sense to me without a design. Right? And people that have worked with me, my honor students, know the first thing I say to them is, let's draw me your design. What do you want to do? Just show me your design. And then we work it out from there. Right? Because then I can say, oh, I know what kind of, now I know what the analysis is. That's good.
See, but in my head, I see four groups, right?
So there are four groups.
So I would say that for your subjects, you would just do, what was our end? Six?
Six.
Six times four. That's the total number of subjects. That's like, I know...
Total number of subjects, not the total number of observations.
Okay, but is that right? That
yeah.
The total number of subjects would be...
Total number of subjects would be 24.
Okay.
But you got 24, 24, and 24, because you got three replications of those 24.
Okay.
C1, C2, C3.
So big N is number of observations, little n is number of people in the
per cell. Yep. Yep. So you see, you can go backwards, which is actually, frankly, a lot of times what you end up doing if you're reading a paper and you're trying to say, well, how the hell do they do this? Because sometimes people's method sections really blow. No, they do. I mean, not everybody's a great writer. So sometimes you have to look at something and say, okay, I'm going to look at the analysis. Now I can drop the design. Oh, now I see what they did. Right? And a lot of times with the more complicated experiments, people will actually tell you in brackets, you know, F was this and this, mean squared error equals this, with this many, and you know what the degrees of freedom are. So you can say, oh, I see these different error terms. Oh, that's that error term. You can rebuild it. It really is something that's really a useful skill. Because when you're reading the literature and you get into designs, and that's not a complicated design. That's a very typical kind of design you'd have. I mean, I think of, like, the stuff that I did for my PhD work with the Skinner box stuff. I had one between, so that's got two levels. I got three within and another five within. So it was a 2x3x5, two repeated. And that really isn't a complicated experiment. It's two species remembering three different things at five different retention intervals. Oh, that's easy to understand. So as long as you can give yourself, like I said, think of A and B, something that, you know, it could be, this could be sort of a test type and retention interval, and these can be different levels of processing. It was something like that. Just realize that one of them is repeated. This is quite a useful skill. And we'll be playing with this for the next week and a half or so until we completely shift gears and do multiple regression. All right, questions? All right, let's pack it in for today, and we'll continue this on Thursday. I hope to have your test marked by Thursday.
Is released under a Creative Commons copyright, Sharealike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right, giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.